All right. Good morning. And before I really get started, I'd like to say that Dr. Oosterhuis and I thank you for the invitation to present today and the opportunity to talk to you about high temperature stress on floral development and yield of cotton. So the problem is high temperatures. Global climate change is projected to cause an increase of global surface temperatures of 1.8 to 4 degrees C by the end of the 21st century. And the United Nations Global Panel on Climate Change has declared that the evidence for human-induced global climate change is unequivocal, and that the debate now centers more about what to do about it rather than whether it's really occurring or not. So as you can see, there is this trend of an increase in global surface temperatures in recent years. The other problem is that plants have very specific temperature requirements. Temperature is the predominant factor that governs crop growth and productivity. And for example, in cotton, temperature controls plant growth, developmental events, and fruit maturation. Additionally, the cotton crop is particularly sensitive to high temperature during reproductive development. And it is these high temperatures that may be a major cause of low and unpredictable yield in cotton. So whenever I tell people that I work on heat stress in cotton, at least some of my friends, I usually get laughed at because, as mentioned earlier, cotton loves the high temperatures, right? That's the assumption many people have. And it does originate from warm environments, and it does require warm temperatures to develop, but that doesn't mean that it does well at excessively high temperatures. For example, some work in Mississippi has shown that the optimal temperature for cotton, the optimal day-night temperature regime, is a 30-20 C day-night temperature regime. But the average maximum daily temperatures during flowering often exceed this. They're often almost always above 32 degrees C. So low cotton yields. Yield in cotton is well below the theoretical maximum. For example, the five-year average yield for Arkansas is 946 pounds of lint per acre, but the theoretical maximum lint yield is 3,270 pounds of lint per acre. So less than a third is what we're realizing right now. In addition to the yields being low, they're also unpredictable, and there's extreme year-to-year variability. Although we see an increasing trend in yield across the years, there is still this extreme year-to-year variability, and this has been attributed to, at least partially, to high temperatures during the flowering period. For example, there is a negative correlation that exists between high temperatures and yield. You can see in this graph on the right, you do see this regression line. You see there is a negative relationship between yield and temperature. But this graph on the left, I think, shows it pretty nicely, and that is, you see the triangles, this is the maximum temperatures, and the circles are the yield. So when the temperatures are around this 85 degree mark, a little below or a little above, we have higher yields. Whenever the temperatures are above 90 and close to 95 here, we have lower yields. So high temperature does accelerate plant development. But with this accelerated development, there is abnormal development. And all stages of development from germination to initiation of floral structures and bowl development can be negatively impacted by high temperature. For example, germination and emergence, root growth, vegetative growth, reproductive growth, and yield are all negatively impacted at temperatures in excess of this optimal temperature range. So as a general statement, we can say that the optimal temperature range for these processes is approximately 25 to 32 degrees C. And the negative impacts of temperature on yield and on growth are the result of the impact of temperature on physiological processes. Because physiological processes are enzyme dependent, any temperatures in excess of the optimal temperature range for enzyme activity will negatively impact physiology. So the thermokinetic window for cotton is 23.5 to 32 degrees C, but daily temperatures are often in excess of this range. And temperatures in excess of this range, for example, temperatures greater than 35 that are common to many cotton growing areas, decreased photosynthesis through an influence on quantum efficiency, and decreased chlorophyll content, membrane integrity, and increased photorespiration. So these impacts on the physiology result in lower leaf area expansion, and biomass accumulation. So this graph shows an example of the effect of temperature on photosynthesis. We see no negative effects here until 35. This is when we see the negative impacts on photosynthesis. So this is just an example of showing how temperature does affect the physiology of the plant. So now I'd like to talk about some general effects of high temperature on reproductive growth. The number of fruiting sites is not necessarily negatively affected by moderately high temperatures, but those same temperatures can bring about significant declines in boll retention. And this decreased boll retention is due to enhanced shedding of squares and young bolls. Additionally, there is a strong correlation between high abscission rates and low carbohydrate contents of young bolls and squares. For example, Zhao in 2005 reported a decline in boll retention from 19.2 bolls per plant to 5.8 bolls per plant when they were transferred from this 30-22 day-night temperature regime to a 36-28 day-night temperature regime. He also looked at UVB radiation, but I'm going to focus on the temperature effects here. This boll abscission was negatively correlated with non-structural carbohydrate content in the young bolls. So as you see here, high temperature resulted in a decline in glucose, fructose, and starch in the young boll. Now the final yield in cotton is strongly influenced by temperature, primarily through the influence of temperature on the components of yield. For example, boll number declines substantially as temperatures increase above 30 degrees C, and that's related to the boll retention. Boll size also decreases under elevated temperatures. And finally, even slightly elevated temperatures, as in Pettigrew's study, were sufficient to cause declines in seed number without a concomitant decline in seed weight. And this suggests that the fertilization process may be negatively impacted. So next I'd like to talk about anthesis, which is a critical time in the reproductive development of cotton. There are a number of events that occur on this single day, and any factor that negatively impacts any of these processes will ultimately negatively impact the fertilization process, which is required for the production of seeds, and ultimately yield. So inhibition of any of these steps will result in negative impacts on yield. So on the day of anthesis, the flower opens as a white flower at dawn. Pollination occurs a few hours later, followed by germination, stigma penetration by the pollen tube growth through the style, and then ultimately fertilization of the ovule. So when we look at some of these earlier events, for example, pollen germination and pollen tube growth, I'd like to point out in these graphs on the left, we have germination, percent germination, and we have on the x-axis we have our temperatures. And then on the right, we have pollen tube length. And from these data, in general, we can say that an optimal temperature range for pollen germination is between 28 and 37 degrees C. And the optimal temperature for pollen tube growth is between 28 and 32 degrees C. When we look at the effect of high temperature imposed at 1 week prior to flowering, for example, we have on the left here, and in gray, we have a 30-20 day-night temperature regime, or the optimal temperature regime. And then on the right, we have a 38-20 day-night temperature regime, and this is our high day temperature regime. And what we see is that there's a significant decline in ovule number. There's an even greater decline in the number of fertilized ovules, 46.4% decline, and a decline in the fertilization efficiency. So a 32.9% decline in fertilization efficiency, and this could be attributed to poor pollen germination, pollen tube growth, or pollen tube guidance to the ovule due to ovule abortion. It could be any of these, but I will point out that in this study we did observe many more germinated pollen grains even under the high temperature on the stigmatic surface than would be required to fertilize all of the ovules in an ovary. So next I'd like to talk about some of the energetic requirements for reproductive processes to occur. And pollen tube growth through the style and ovule development depends upon carbohydrate reserves in the pistil. However, heat stress reduces carbohydrate allocation to developing sinks by decreasing photosynthesis of source leaves, increasing dark respiration and photorespiration, and decreasing carbohydrate translocation due to callus deposition in the sieve plates. Following on from that, under heat stress, again these are similar regimes here, under heat stress we saw a 20.3% decline in the soluble carbohydrate content of the pistil. We also saw an even greater decline, a 55% decline in the ATP content of the pistil as well. Now next I'm going to talk about calcium, and all mineral elements essentially for reproductive processes to occur, all the mineral elements are required, mineral nutrients I should say, are required. Someone mentioned boron earlier. So these are important for reproductive development, but calcium has been shown to be especially important for reproductive development because it's involved in a number of these processes that occur. Pollen germination, it promotes pollen tube growth. It may facilitate guidance to the ovule. It is required for gamete fusion and egg cell activation. For example, if we see this, you see this image on the right here. This is just showing differences in calcium concentrations along the pollen tube, and this oscillates with pollen tube growth. So as the pollen tube is growing, the growth is occurring at the tip of the pollen tube, and the free calcium concentrations in that pollen tube are really high at the tip of that growing pollen tube. Next, I'll talk about calcium and reactive oxygen species in response to stress. Under heat stress, reactive oxygen species increase. These damaging reactive oxygen species increase in plant tissues. Cytosolic calcium levels increase. And then in response to this, this increase in cytosolic calcium levels, we see an increase in antioxidant enzyme activity as well. But not all ROS are bad. That's an important thing to note. There is intentional production of reactive oxygen species. For example, NADPH oxidase, or NOX as I'll refer to it from here on, produces superoxide required for cell wall softening and pollen tube elongation to occur. So if you see this image here, this is an image of a growing pollen tube. And again, near the tip is where a lot of the activity is occurring. And this stain is specific for superoxide. And through this and a number of other methods, what they showed is that this tip localized NOx-dependent ROS production was required for growing pollen tubes. So next I'd like to talk to you about how temperature affects calcium in the pistil. And what we see is that the water-soluble calcium levels in the pistil increase significantly under heat stress, but that the total calcium levels in the pistil remain unchanged. When we look at antioxidant enzymes, what we see is that there is an increase in glutathione reductase activity in the pistil in response to heat stress, but there is a decline in NOx activity in response to high temperature. So we've concluded that a calcium-augmented increase in antioxidant enzyme activity may interfere with pollen tube localized NOx activity that is required for the pollen tube to grow. So next I'd like to talk about the subtending leaf, and the reason for this is that subtended bulls obtain approximately 60% of their total carbohydrate requirement from adjacent subtending leaves. So this highlights the importance of the subtending leaf in the overall reproductive development of the cotton plant. And under heat stress, what we've observed is that there's a significant decline in net photosynthesis, a significant increase in stomatal conductance, and a decline in chlorophyll content. Additionally, both actual quantum efficiency and maximum or potential quantum efficiency of that subtending leaf also declines under high temperature. But in contrast to those trends, we see no change in the ATP content of the subtending leaf. So we've seen a lot of changes that occur under high temperature or heat stress, both in the pistil and in the leaf. And the next question is, which of these are important in promoting reproductive thermal tolerance? So to evaluate that and to answer that question, we need a tolerant cultivar to compare with. So we utilized this VH260 cultivar, and this is a cultivar we obtained from Pakistan, where it's grown at temperatures as high as 45 degrees C during the day. And we compared it with a conventional cultivar, the ST4554 cultivar, which I'll just refer to as the sensitive cultivar from here out. And so let me just set up this graph here, this figure. In A, we see a pollen tube that has penetrated the ovule and is positioned within the embryo sac, and this would be considered fertilized. And we see fertilization efficiencies in B here. So when we look at this graph, I'm going to point out that the sensitive cultivar is on the left, the tolerant cultivar is on the right, and in black we have the optimal temperature regime, and in gray we have the high temperature regime. So this is how this will be in the next set of graphs as well. So this is going to be similar in all of those. And what we can see is that under high temperature, in response to high temperature, the sensitive cultivar shows a significant decline in fertilization efficiency, but the tolerant cultivar shows no change in the fertilization efficiencies in response to this high temperature treatment. Next, I'd like to look at, like to show you some of the data on the antioxidant enzymes. So again, this is set up as before. We have our optimal temperatures here, and what's important to note is that when you look at under optimal temperature conditions, one of the things that you see is that for the tolerant cultivar, the glutathione reductase activity and the superoxide dismutase activity is significantly higher than for the sensitive cultivar. So this is under optimal temperature conditions. Following exposure to high temperature, there is no difference between these cultivars in their antioxidant enzyme activity, and there was no difference in NOx activity for temperature treatment or cultivar. And so we've concluded, or we've speculated, that this pre-stress antioxidant enzyme capacity in the pistil may be an important indicator of reproductive thermal tolerance in cotton. There were some additional effects of cultivar that were independent of temperature regime, but one of the things that's important to note is that for the tolerant cultivar, we saw significantly higher levels of ATP, water-soluble calcium, and total calcium in the pistil independent of temperature regime. So these characteristics may be essential components of innate reproductive thermal tolerance in cotton. So next, I'd like to move on to some of the genotypic effects of the subtending leaf and how the thermotolerance of the subtending leaf differs between these cultivars. And so in response to high temperature, one of the things we saw is that photosynthetic rates declined significantly for the sensitive cultivar here, but there was no change, no significant change in the photosynthetic rates in response to high temperature for the tolerant cultivar. So if you look at conductance, to model conductance, what we did see is that there was a significant increase in the stomatal conductance in response to high temperature, but only for the tolerant cultivar. And we'd speculated this might have might cool the leaf under the high temperature regime, but we did not observe a difference in the leaf temperatures between these two cultivars under high temperature. Similar to the trend for photosynthesis, there was a slight decline in maximum quantum efficiency for the sensitive cultivar and no change in maximum quantum efficiency for the tolerant cultivar. There was a significant decline in chlorophyll A to B ratio under high temperature and only for the tolerant cultivar. In response to high temperature, for both cultivars, we saw a decline in the total chlorophyll content. And so we've suggested that this lower chlorophyll A to B ratio may help maintain the quantum efficiencies here under high temperature despite a decline in chlorophyll content. Next, I'd like to talk about the temperature responses here of the two cultivars. And before I do, I'm going to point out what some of these terms are. T-opt, obviously it's the optimum temperature, so this is the temperature at which the quantum efficiency of the subtending leaf is maximal. And this T15 value here is the temperature resulting in a 15% decline from the value at T-opt, and it's an accepted parameter for quantifying high temperature thresholds in different species. So, having said that, when we look at the optimal temperatures for these two cultivars, one of the things we see is that for the sensitive cultivar, the optimal temperature is 27.7 degrees C. The optimal temperature for the tolerant cultivar is 35.2 degrees C. When we look at the threshold temperatures, these high temperature thresholds, we see that the threshold temperature for the sensitive cultivar is 38 degrees C, but the threshold temperature for the tolerant cultivar is 43.5 degrees C. And I would just like to note that the leaves were maintained at each temperature for 5 minutes prior to the quantum efficiency measurements. When we look at pre-stress antioxidant enzyme activities of those leaves, what we see is that there is no difference between the cultivars in their superoxide dismutase activities. But when we look at glutathione reductase, the pre-stress levels of glutathione reductase, they are significantly higher in the tolerant cultivar than in the sensitive cultivar. So we went on from there to quantify the relationship between the pre-stress level of antioxidant enzyme activity and the threshold temperature of that leaf. And what we what I'd like to point out is in A, we have glutathione reductase activity on the x-axis, and in B, we have superoxide dismutase activity on the x-axis, and we have our threshold temperature, our T15 values, on the y-axis here. Additionally, the open circles represent the tolerant cultivar, and the closed circles represent the sensitive cultivar. So what we can see is that there is a relationship between the level of antioxidant enzyme activity, the pre-stress level, and the degree of thermal tolerance. And so what we've suggested is that this high temperature threshold is dependent upon the pre-stress levels of glutathione reductase and SOD, and this is likely an innate mechanism for coping with rapid leaf temperature increases that commonly occur under field conditions. So our general conclusions are that even though cotton originates from hot climates, there is a negative correlation between yield and high temperature. So it does not do best at excessively high temperatures. The optimal temperature, day-night temperature regime for cotton is a 30-20 C day-night temperature regime. But during flowering, as I said earlier, the temperatures are almost always above 32 and often exceed 38. We've seen those high temperature days during the summer. And all physiological functions and stages of cotton development, from germination to initiation of floral structures and bulb maturity, are influenced by elevated temperatures. And this is the result of the effect of high temperature on enzyme activity and ultimately physiology of the cotton plant. Bulb retention, rather than the total number of fruiting sites, is most sensitive to temperatures higher than 30 C due to enhanced shedding of squares in young bulls. There is a strong correlation between the abscission rates and the soluble carbohydrate contents of those floral buds. And elevated temperatures act to reduce seed number without necessarily a concomitant decline in the seed weight. When we look at the effect of heat stress on the flower during anthesis, what we see is that high temperature inhibits pollen germination and pollen tube growth. Heat stress acts to reduce in vivo fertilization efficiency in thermal sensitive cultivars, and the energetic status, for instance, the carbohydrate ATP content of the pistil during anthesis may be a key determinant of reproductive thermotolerance. Having high calcium levels as well in the pistil may provide a criterion for identifying thermotolerant cultivars. And it seems that more than just the antioxidant response to high temperature, a balance between reactive oxygen scavenging and enzymatic reactive oxygen production in the pistil is important for maintaining fertilization efficiency under high temperature. Thermostable subtending leaf photosynthesis is closely associated with reproductive thermotolerance. We've seen that in the genotype studies where we compared the two different genotypes, two different cultivars. And then finally, having a sufficient antioxidant enzyme pool prior to heat stress in the subtending leaf, and I will say as well in the pistil, is likely a genotypic mechanism for coping with rapid leaf temperature fluctuations. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
We have several minutes for questions. Check.
I would like to make a plea for leaf temperature measurements rather than air temperature measurements.
Yeah. In
we saw earlier that the cotton leaf has a great tendency to operate below air temperature unless the humidity is high, and you can't tell from the study how the humidity was influencing those leaves.
I will say that in those long-term growth chamber experiments, we did measure the leaf temperatures, and they, under the high temperature, they were about, this is in the growth chamber, of course, it's different under the field, I'm sure, but under the growth chamber, I saw about a 2 degree difference between the temperature of the growth chamber and the temperature of the leaf, so it was 2 degrees cooler, and it wasn't different between, as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't different between those cultivars under high temperature.
Well, in the published version of this paper, please tell us what the leaf temperature is.
It does have the leaf temperature in the published version of this paper.
And when you're doing outdoors, infrared thermometers are not expensive nowadays.
Yep.
Measure the
yep. I've measured using infrared and thermocouples in any field work I've done. It's just not published yet.
Well, let us know.
Okay.
We have time for some more questions.
Yes.
Do you know, I was going to ask this even before Jack asked about the temperature, but in some crops, the positions of the flowers allow them to cool.
Oh, yeah, and that's why,
And there's a little bit of transpiration from flowers.
And that's right, but the flowers typically, if they're, and that's right, shading, that's a big thing, is how you collect the flowers. We stay consistent with the position that we collect them in, and whether they're illuminated and not illuminated, especially if you were to do studies out in the field, and you need to know exactly what the conditions were at that pistil, and that's what we've done in a number of our studies.
Has anybody ever studied that?
Not
by position.
Well, I've seen some people. I think Burke did some of that. Yes, showing that at some of the shaded ones, their temperatures are cooler than some of the illuminated ones. And I've, in the field, I will say that, the pistil, I'm sure, I know it undoubtedly transpires some, but it's definitely, it's pretty hot. In other words, it doesn't transpire enough.
A lot less.
Yeah, and so it's hotter than if you were to compare a leaf temperature,
yes,
for example.
Bruce, we measured bulb temperatures after flowering. It's a little more easier to do with thermocouples.
Yeah.
We've got profiles in the canopy of what these different bulb temperatures are.
And, that's true.
Bulb itself has done that. Cools itself, but only for about 2 weeks before those stone mats get occluded with wax and the subspinal cavity is closed up.
But isn't the pollination issue just in about a 12 to 24 hour window?
It is. It's a 12 to 24, that's right. And again, what I'm saying is the effect of temperature stress prior to that is influencing the biochemistry of the pistil. But yeah, these events are occurring in a very short time frame, and so anything that influences that prior to that event will influence what goes on there.
This isn't to reduce the impact of all the work you've done. It's just an additional factor that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and that's something we're looking at in the field, just trying to get all the data together. But we've looked at a lot of this in the field, and it is interesting. And I haven't seen it out there necessarily. I mean, I've seen I've seen temperatures mentioned as far as comparing, how much cooler the pistil is than the air and how it responds. And then looking at pollen tube growth. That's something we're looking at, in vivo pollen tube growth. So that's something we're looking at in the field setting. Yes?
Did you get any other nighttime temperatures?
I have not. That is we wanted to isolate, really, this is the effect of high day temperature. One of Dr. Easterhouse's students recently had a paper accepted on night temperature work, and that's where she strictly changed the night temperature. So we have an effect of these two things. Now, under natural conditions, yeah, both of them will increase. That's what we see. But yeah, when you isolate it, you can see the effect of the high day temperature and the high night. So yeah, I just looked at the high day temperature in these studies.
Okay, thank you, John, very much. Well,